because there are important things to consider when deciding where to look for land.
Oh, absolutely. And you might be in a situation where you cannot get into a piece of land. So we're going to talk about alternatives to purchasing land.
Welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast, where we discuss the journey to real liberty through self-sufficiency, counter-economics, non-aggression, and the agora.
The Outpost represents the border between societal norm and the pioneer spirit. Every episode contains practical, philosophical, and technical information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve.
Welcome, everybody, to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. I am here with my colleague, Cyrus.
Good morning.
And today we are covering the first pillar of going off-grid. I would recommend going back one episode and listening to the introduction to the seven pillars of going off-grid, so you know what you're getting into. And basically, we will be covering each pillar every Friday. It's an ongoing series, so make sure to bookmark our podcast and you can hear them all.
Yeah.
So basically, the first pillar of going off-grid is location. Location, location, location. That's everything.
Right. Where are you going to live off-grid at?
Where are you going to live off-grid at?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. Where do you live off-grid at?
I'm in the Ozarks in Arkansas.
Wow.
And
that's badass.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there were reasons why we chose this place. So we can kind of go through the reasons why we ended up here as we go through the first pillar. And then, you know, some of it might be if someone already owns some land in a specific place, that'll just be their location, you know. But if you don't have land yet and you're going to be looking for land, this is going to be a really important episode to pay attention to. Because there are important things to consider when deciding where to look for land.
Oh, absolutely. And you might be in a situation where you cannot get into a piece of land. So we're going to talk about alternatives to purchasing land.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people kind of get hung up on that when they think about going off grid is, oh, I don't have the money. Oh, I can't buy the property, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there are options for you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be just purchasing property.
Right.
Well, I think the first thing to take a look at when you're looking for property is the climate.
Yeah, and ideally, everyone has an ideal climate that they like. So that's kind of where you start, whether you want to live in a warm place or a cold place or a place that has all four seasons, you know, whatever your preferences are. So that's kind of where you start. And then from there, look at other things that are affected by the climate. If you're going to grow your own food, you obviously care about what the growing season is like.
Yeah. Yeah. There's pros and cons to selecting, you know, your ideal climate.
You know, the growing season is pretty easy. The closer you get to the equator, the longer the growing season is. The further away you get, the shorter it is a good basic rule.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and you got to figure, like, if you're looking at homesteading in Montana, you know, that's pretty hardcore to get through a 6-month cold winter. But at the same time, like, you know, Montana is epic. So you may decide that the epic beauty of being in big country is worth it. You know, the 6 months of freeze.
Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's always trade-offs, right? So, you know, somewhere like Montana where you have just the amazing landscape and pretty good freedom. You know, Montana is one of those states where they value freedom.
Super free.
Yeah. So, but you're going to, the trade-off is a shorter growing season and a harsher winter.
Yeah. So you're looking at, I mean, if you're like really off grid and I'm talking, you know, creating your own energy and whatnot, you're looking at prepping all summer to get through the winter, which is what they did in the old days.
Right.
You are canning, pickling, preserving, hunting, dehydrating, everything, and then collecting crap tons of wood.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a daily chore, you know, to collect the wood to get through winter. So depending on how hardcore off-grid you want to go. Now, you don't have to go 100% balls to the walls off-grid in Montana. Mm-hmm. Like, I would probably invest in, you know, a propane system.
Right.
But if you were to lose propane or access to propane or shit hits the fan and propane is no longer a thing, well, you're looking at some serious work to not freeze to death in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like you said, the trade-off is Montana is so epically free. I mean, it's just unreal. You go up there and you're as free as a bird.
Yeah.
And that goes for, like, the laws and regulations, all of it. You're just basically 100% free in beautiful, rugged landscapes that are breathtaking. So
they didn't even have speed limits for a long time, right?
Yeah, I think the speed limits only came around in the 90s.
Right. Yeah, pretty free place. Yeah.
Now they're 80.
Yeah.
Which is pretty high.
Yeah, there's always going to be trade-offs, and you've just got to choose your trade-offs, you know. Like, for example, when my wife and I were looking for land, we wanted to go to Colorado, but the land prices were just out of our range for the areas that we wanted to live in. And so we switched and chose Arkansas because land prices were just so much lower.
Oh, my goodness. Very, very reasonable in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Land prices in Montana have exploded, so you can still find well-priced areas, but oh man, you're gonna have to boonie stomp. I mean, you're gonna be in four-wheel drive during the summer just to get to your property, let alone winter could be very well impassable. So you're committing, you know, to really being off-grid,
right?
To get those cheaper property prices. You know, but from what I've noticed, because I've traveled all over America for the past 5 years, I'm in an RV, we travel, and basically, you're going to pay a whole lot more money for more desirable places.
That's right, because it's just supply and demand. The most desirable places have the most people trying to live there, so prices go up. And that includes, you know, the costs of living, so everything is higher. A gallon of gas is higher. A gallon of milk is higher.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And you want to, there are sites that you can go to find out what the average annual rainfall is of an area, in case you're thinking about doing rainwater catchment for water, which, you know, is also good for your growing season. If you don't get very much rain, you've got to consider that. You're going to have to water a garden more often.
Yep.
If you're going to do wind power, you've got to look up what the average daily wind is in areas. And you can look all this information up online. There are sites that put out this information. Same with solar. You know, there are peak hours of sunshine, and every area is a little bit different.
Another huge thing about climate really is water. I mean, water and climate go hand in hand, and you kind of touched on that a little bit, but I would say your top priority of choosing a location is water, access to water.
Yeah, you've got to have access to water or a plan to get water. You know, there are places where you just don't have any access to water unless you're catching rainfall.
And that for me is a little bit unpredictable to fully rely on, you know, unless you live in like Washington where you know it's just going to rain incessantly. But even then, you never know. Washington could go through a drought, but you've got to have a backup plan anyways for water. You know, and we'll go more into that because that's one of our pillars is, you know, off-grid water systems as far as having a primary and secondary water plan. But, you know, you get a property with a river or creek running through it and you're paying a lot more money for it.
And you've got to pay attention to the cost of living, which we kind of already touched on.
Yeah, let's go more into that. What kind of costs of living do we need to keep an eye on?
Obviously, property costs, what it's going to take to buy your land, and then
the initial purchase.
Property taxes. Different places have different property taxes. And so some states won't have, like, sales tax, but it usually means their property taxes will be higher. Things like that.
Yeah.
The property taxes here are where I am in Arkansas. They're just unbelievably cheap. I pay $30 a year, $30.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's really cheap.
Super cheap. Yeah.
Holy moly. And how many acres do you have?
10. And if you had 10 acres in Texas, you know, it'd probably be $1,000. I mean, I don't know. I just know that Texas has much higher property taxes.
And so does Montana. Yeah, Montana, because we don't have sales tax, which is freaking awesome. I love it. You buy something and you pay that exact price at the register, so you can calculate, you know, what you're going to end up spending very easily. But the flip side is the higher property taxes and registration fees. That's where they get you. Vehicle registration and property tax to make up for that lack of sales tax.
Yeah, and a pretty good indicator to what the cost of living is in an area is going to be the median income of that state. So,
oh, that's a good point.
You can look up the list of median incomes and get an idea of the cost of the cost of living. So, like in Arkansas, the median income is really low compared to the other 50 states, and so we have a lower cost of living.
Yeah, the cost of living in Montana is not cheap. It's not crazy expensive either, like California or New York, but it's, you know, the income levels are fairly high in Montana, especially over the past 10, 15 years. It's really gone up, and the cost of living has gone up. Like, the cost of food is probably where it's most noticeable for me, at least.
Mm.
You know, because everything's imported in Montana, mostly, except for beef.
Yeah.
Beef and corn.
Yeah.
Beef, corn, and wheat.
Right. Another indicator for a state is the fuel costs also, like the cost of gasoline. You know, you hear reports about what the average gallon of gas is costing at any particular time. And the areas with that fall below the average typically have a lower cost of living.
Yeah. Now that makes sense.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Around here, the gas prices are always cheaper than the national average, like by quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know what the average is right now, but I paid $1.59 last week for a gallon for
How gas. Much was it? $1.59?
Yeah, $1.59. What did you pay driving from Texas to when you were filling up going across Texas? What'd you pay?
When I went from Texas to Arizona, you know, we went through New Mexico for a minute. The prices were pretty much the same. It started gradually going up the closer to Arizona that we got, but we went from probably like 209 up to 229, I would say was the range.
Mm.
And you're at $1.59, so that's like literally 25% less.
Yeah, gas is always cheaper here than national average. So it's just, that's another indicator you can look at about to get an idea of what your cost of living is going to be in an area.
Yeah, and you can pull up a map, like a gas map, that will show you basically just at a glance all the cost of gas throughout America.
Yeah, I think it's...
And you can make a pretty quick indication of what your lower cost of living areas will be.
Yeah.
And as far as cost of living goes, next week's episode, the next pillar is finances. Like, how are you going to manage to make an income while being off grid? And I know that's a huge, like, obstacle for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I talk about going off grid with people, it always comes down to the money. How am I going to make a living?
Right.
So next week, we're really going to be hitting that. And it's really not as hard as you would think. You just have to get creative, basically.
Yeah.
So that'll be something to look forward to. Now, the next topic I think is really interesting, and that is the to own or not to own topic. And this kind of breaches an area where people are steadfast and, oh, I got to buy a 20-acre property. It's going to cost me several hundred thousands of dollars. Well, we have a solution for that. Several solutions.
Yeah. And before we get into the solutions, everybody wants a whole bunch of land, which, you know, I do too. I would love to have 1,000 acres and a little cabin in the middle of it, but...
Heck yeah.
But you can go off grid with just a couple of acres. You don't have to have it. Like, it's not a necessity to go off grid. You know, you can grow, you can raise all your food for your family on just a couple acres. It doesn't take a lot of land.
It's true.
So just keep that in
mind. Yeah, it's hard not to get into the mind state of, I want, you know, minimum 20 acres. And of course, it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you're grazing cattle, yeah, you're going to need a lot more acres. But if you're just doing goats and, you know, vertical farming, you could do a vertical garden. You're going to get way more in on way less land.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. You don't. It's not a necessity to have a bunch of land. It just, like you said, it just depends on what your plan is.
Yeah, what's your plan? What's your master plan? You know, you can always start with a 2 acre and upgrade to a 10 acre or 20 acre in 5 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it would kind of be difficult to move.
Right.
Like after you've done all this work, but that's, you know, that's all psychological, really.
Yeah. My dad, we lived out in the country, and any time a piece of land that came up for sale that touched our land, he bought it.
Oh, wow.
So anytime a neighbor was selling something, he made the first offer. And, you know, I remember one time I had asked him, how much land do we need? He goes, I said, how much land do you want? He goes, I don't want to own all the land. I just want to own all the land that touches mine.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. But,
yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah. I mean, if you're in a situation where you start off with 2 acres and then people start selling around you over the years, it would be ideal to scoop up, you know, property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
You don't have to go through a bank to buy land. You can always buy land from an individual for sale by owner. You can oftentimes get an owner finance deal and get a better deal than you would have got from a bank. And that just requires talking to people. You know, if you know somebody is thinking about selling some land, you just have to go talk to them. A lot of people haven't even considered the idea that they don't need a realtor, or that, you know, they can have a monthly income for a period of time by taking payments from you to sell their land.
Yeah.
Like the piece of land that I bought, the guy originally just wanted to sell it outright. And I just talked to him and told him what I would do, you know, and he accepted my offer and owner financed it. But he had no plans to do that when it was, you know, when you look at the listing, you never know what someone might do. So you just have to talk to them.
Interesting. Well, and there's a lot of land that is not listed. I've noticed this in my travels. Anytime we travel somewhere new, I always start looking at property listings and whatnot. And what I've noticed is there is a big discrepancy of what's listed on like Zillow and Trulia and all these like real estate apps to what is actually physically listed. And that's your for sale by owners. That's your older people that aren't, you know, listing online. So you really need to go to where you want to purchase property and really just start driving around and looking for sale signs. A lot of them are just handwritten, you know?
There's this little country store by me where the old farmers in the area, they're always at this little country store at like 6 a.m. in the morning. And they have breakfast together, you know? There's like 7 or 8 of these older gentlemen. And I bet if you found a place like that in an area and you just went and said, hey, anybody know of any land for sale? I bet you would get all kinds of stuff, you know? Oh, Mr. Wilkson up the road, he's got 5 acres he's been trying to get rid of for 5 years. You know, he's never listed it, but he's been selling it, trying to sell it for 5 years, that kind of thing. It happens all the time.
Oh, it's all over. It's all over. And that's how you're going to get the good deals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. And they, you know what? A lot of them meet at McDonald's on Sundays.
Yeah. Yeah.
The little town I lived in Montana. Maybe it's a Montana thing. I don't know. There's always a group of old folks at like every McDonald's in every small town. If your town is, you know, a little bit larger to have a McDonald's, that's kind of where they tend to go. Yeah. One couple, they actually approached, they did some research. They found a piece of property that was dilapidated. There was no for sale sign on it. It just had a bunch of garbage on it and was clearly not used for years. They looked up the property owner through the cadastral system, called him, and purchased the land for an extremely good deal. Because, I mean, it was literally sitting there. So they didn't even have it listed for sale.
Right. They just pay the property taxes every year.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a lot of pieces like that.
So these folks were, they were glad to get rid of that, you know, property that was overgrown and full of garbage. And they ended up harvesting timber off of it and selling some timber, and it paid for the price of the property.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So they essentially, kind of essentially got it for free. I mean, not technically free, but about as free as you can get it. So, you know, you definitely got to go outside of the real estate box when you're looking for property.
Yeah, going through a realtor is really not the ideal situation. Going through a realtor and using a bank, it's really the worst way to do it.
It's going to be the most expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the most red tape as well.
Right. But if you do buy from an individual, you do want to pay for a title search on your own. Because when you go through a realtor, that's all done in the closings. You know, it's an automatic kind of thing that people may not even think about. But you want to pay for a title search. And that's just because sometimes there's problems with a title and the ownership of that piece of property is not real clear. So the person who thinks they own it and is trying to sell it to you, they may not actually be the owner. But they think they are.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Happens a lot.
That's a great piece
of advice.
When
people die and, a probate happens and things just get muddied, you know.
Oh, wow.
So be sure and pay for a title search if you're not going through typical channels where that would be an automatic kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice right there.
And then, you don't even have to own the land either. You can rent land in the country really cheap. And
yep.
It's a way to go off grid and spend some time saving up your dollars to buy your own piece of land sometime. But if you're just ready to go get out of the city, but you don't have the money to purchase land, find a piece of land out in the country that you can rent, you know? And
yeah.
And you can lease land too. You've got leasing as part of your plan, right? Aren't you planning on like leasing BLM or something in your grand scheme?
My grand scheme, it kind of goes on to gold claims, mm-hmm. actually. And from what I've researched, and I can't say this for every single state, but you pay like your gold claim fee per year, which is like $600. And then you can live on that property, that claim, if you put an outbuilding on there that is meant just for gold processing. So basically, I could build a shed, put a sluice box in there, a dry sluice, or some sort of gold recovery item, and you're good.
Right. And you don't own the land, but you can live there for as long as you keep up that lease.
Yeah, which is, $600 a year is what, $50 a month?
Yeah, crazy cheap.
You can stay on that claim. But, people can hike and fish and do things on that land, but they can't gold prospect and they're not allowed to live on it. They could camp on it.
Yeah.
So, to me, I don't know. I feel like that wouldn't bother me because I'm going to choose a location that's remote enough that there will be very few people coming by.
Right. But you just could occasionally have some visitors that you can't kick off.
Yeah. But, for $50 a month, that's a pretty good deal. And a claim, I forget the size of claims. I want to say they're 20 acres. I mean, it really depends on where you're at. But I think the standard size, I want to say, is 20 off the top of my head.
Yeah.
At least in Montana.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That's a really good plan. Just another...
It's a inventive...
Yeah, another unique way of getting off grid.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you don't have to have any land at all. You can be nomadic like you are right now. There's a lot of people doing that.
We are nomadic RV people. Our RV is not set up for off grid. And we probably wouldn't make this model off grid. We'd have to downsize to a 30 amp.
Yeah.
But we're in a 50 amp, 42 foot fifth wheel. We could make it off grid, but I think we just have to downsize. There's a lot of solar power ready RVs where you literally have the hookup, the wiring's all ready to go. All you have to do is throw some solar panels up on your roof.
Right. So the industry has even made it easier.
Yes. In the past few years, you're getting solar panel ready units.
Mm-hmm.
You swap out your toilet for a composting toilet and fill up your fresh water tank where you have fresh water, and you're ready to boondock. Basically, it's boondocking.
Yeah. And you can do that with a camper or, I know people who live out of, they have a camper on the truck bed. They have a truck, and in the truck bed, they have a camper, and they live that way. And they drive
the
around
truck
the
campers,
country.
Those are actually pretty nice.
Yeah,
those are pretty decent. I mean, as far as space goes, campers have come a long way. Holy moly. They're pretty nice to live in. And if it's just you and another person, it's comfortable.
And a lot of people are just building their own too. Like if you're handy, if you know construction, you can do it. You can build it yourself.
Oh, yeah. The nice thing about purchasing a pre-made camper is that they're so light now. They've really mastered the lightness. So you can get a 26-foot camper, which is very comfortable with slides and everything. And you're looking at 4,000 or 5,000 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pull that with a half ton.
Right.
So that would be the pro of going pre-made.
Mm-hmm.
You can always have just a shell and then build in, you know, the insides.
Right.
Yeah, I want to take a minute to talk about boondocking, because I think the ideal way to boondock is you can get so far out into BLM land, public land, where you only have to move, like, I think it's every 2 weeks to a month, depending on, you know, the forest you're in. And you just move, like, 500 feet, and you're good, and it's free.
And I would imagine there are areas where you could get away with not even moving very often. I mean, how often is a ranger driving around to check?
I would say as long as it's not like a super busy, like touristy, fun ATV area, you could probably just stay in the same spot all summer.
I bet there are lots of places like that, yeah.
Yeah, I would say in Montana, like the places I'm thinking of, yeah, you could just chill out all summer and not even worry. And I say summer because in winter, you know, you probably don't want to boondock in Montana in the winter. Out of an RV.
Yeah.
That's when you head south to Arizona, where I'm at right now. Holy moly, this place would be awesome.
Right. That's the advantage of the nomadic lifestyle. You just move to where the weather is nice every season.
Exactly. But then you're moving towards more of a foraging, hunting, fishing situation as opposed to a farming, livestock situation. So, you know, give and take.
Right.
My buddy lives year-round in Montana in a schoolie, actually.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've been wanting to build a schoolie for a while. I probably will at some point, just so the wife and I can do a little traveling.
The nice thing about a schoolie is they're very, it's just one piece, you know, it's that one column of metal. So it's a very sturdy situation. A school bus is very sturdy.
Yeah, well, they're built to be rugged. Like, they're built to be hard use.
Safe.
Several years. Mm-hmm. You know, they run every day, you know, 5 days a week, picking up kids. And so they're built to be rugged.
Yeah. Whereas a camper, you know, they're built light. But after 5-10 years of use, even before then, shit'll start rattling loose, just removing.
Right.
So you're going to have, like, moderate repairs. You're going to have leaks and soft spots and, you know, so the schoolie would definitely be your rugged choice. And then you build it out from the inside out of how you want it.
Mm-hmm. I've been looking at prices of school buses for the past year just because it's an interest. And man, you can pick them up cheap. You can find them really cheap sometimes. You know, like cheap, I'm talking $1,000, you know, for something that's 10 years old.
That's not bad.
Mm-mm.
Well, they're constantly, I would imagine, just replacing and replenishing school buses because, you know, the kids need a safe bus. So it's something that's probably being refreshed every year to every other year in most school systems, I would think.
Yeah. And then, you know, that also goes into the politics of the school system. You know, they have a budget that they want to make sure they spend every year. And so when they've got.
That's right.
They're going to spend that money. And so, yeah, buses get replaced quite a bit. I'm sure more so than other, you know, districts. Certain districts are going to replace them more often than others. It just depends on the politics of that school district. But anyway, the point is that you can find really great deals on a used school bus.
Yeah, it was funny. On the way from Texas to Arizona, we passed like a caravan of like old schoolies. I imagine they were taken. Well, they weren't made into schoolies yet. They were still just basic school buses. I imagine they were taking them into Mexico. There was like 8 units of 2 buses each. So one bus was towing another bus. So it was just like this wall of school buses going down to Mexico.
Nice.
They weren't in bad shape either. I mean, they were pretty decent. But the only thing is with a schoolie, like, I feel like you might want to have a bit of knowledge, as a little bit of diesel mechanic knowledge, if you're going to do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're not all diesel, but yeah, it would certainly benefit if you were a mechanic. That would certainly be a benefit.
Yeah.
But the good thing is, you know, doesn't matter where you are in the country, there's somebody who works on school buses.
This is true.
If you have problems.
This is true. So our final topic is regulatory systems.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you want to stay out of regulations as much as possible. I mean, as a rule of thumb.
Some states are much more friendly to the idea of living off grid than others. So you want to do your research and find those places at the state level, first of all. Once you've decided on a basic area, then you want to look at which counties, certain counties are going to be better than other counties. And you definitely want to stay out of the city limits anywhere, because the cities are where most of your regulations are. And so you want to look for what's called unincorporated county areas, which basically just means you're in a county outside of any city limits. And that's where the fewest regulations are going to be. So you're going to have regulations from the state, and you're going to have regulations from the county, and that's it. And those are usually not that much. The state, like where I am,
yes,
in the unincorporated area, there's no building codes. I can build whatever I want.
Nice.
And there are some rules about what I can do with my water and my waste, but I mean, I'm the kind of person that doesn't ask permission. I just do what I want to do, and then if they catch me, they catch me. You know, it's one of those kind of things for me, but...
Yeah, and I don't imagine that there's, like, waste and water police going around, like, you know,
there's
what
not.
Is this guy doing?
Yeah, there's no. Not. The only real problem would be if I wanted to sell this place at some point, the buyer might have some problems. You know, if the buyer's going through a bank.
And then that's just a personal issue.
Right. If the buyer's going to use a bank, they're going to have an inspection, and the inspector's going to catch all the things I'm doing that aren't within the state's regulatory purview.
Which I imagine you'd probably look for a straight buyer anyways, not someone dealing with a bank system, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I would. If I was going to sell this place, I would put listings on places like Craigslist and Facebook and all that, and I would be looking for someone who wants to live off-grid. I would just be finding the people that wouldn't care about regulatory issues.
Yeah, it seems like Facebook Marketplace is really, like, dominating the online direct sales platform. It used to be Craigslist. That's kind of gone the way of the spammers. I used Craigslist for over a decade for selling stuff directly and things like that. But Facebook has really stepped it up. I really love their marketplace platform. And I do not like Facebook. But I like the Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
It's very good. And you can find property on there. You can find property all day long on Facebook Marketplace.
Right. Another thing I wanted to mention is certain cities have a really large land mass, but their population center is in the middle. An example of this is Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. The land mass of Oklahoma City is huge. Like you can have 100 acres 40 miles from Oklahoma City and still be inside city limits of Oklahoma City. It's crazy.
Oh, wow. That is crazy. I guess they just accounted for growth.
Yeah. Well, they annex land all around them all the time. They're always annexing land. So if you find a place like that, and then you're a mile from the city limits, just know that at some point in time, that city might annex your land and just claim it, and then it's incorporated again, and now you're going to have to follow all the restrictions.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good tip. So you mentioned earlier in the episode that you wanted to tell us why you chose the land you ended up on.
Yeah, so there were a lot of reasons. So I already mentioned that we were looking for Colorado is where we wanted to move, but it was just too expensive. And so we started looking in the Ozarks, Arkansas, Missouri, and we found this land. It's outside any city limits by quite a ways, but we're 35 minutes from the nearest decent-sized city that has whatever things we would need to go buy, you know, lumber yard, Walmart, whatever. And so it's really close. The land... I was able to make a deal with the owner who was selling it. So that was another reason, because he was willing to accept the owner financing contract that I had proposed. And I've got a creek that runs through my property that it doesn't run. Nice. It's not all year round. Like it dries up. Like right now it's dry, but it's only dry for a few months out of the year. So that's a water source that I could use if I had to. I don't need to right now. The other reason was it's really hard to get to, and I like that.
That's nice.
There's just no random traffic out here by me because it's remote. Like, I live at a dead end, and
oh, perfect.
It's about 3 miles of dirt road. So that's something we like.
Yeah. So if someone's coming down your road, you're like, who is this person? Because they don't have no business going down that road.
Exactly. We all know each other on this road. There's not a lot of people that live on this road, and we all know who drives what. So when there's a strange vehicle, we all know it's somebody that, you know, we need to find out what business they have on that road, you know. So that's wow. Nice.
Well, you're backed up to the forest, aren't you?
Yeah, backed up to the National Forest, which is another plus.
See, that's what I would look for. I would look for something 5 acres, 10 acres, but then if you're up against the forest, you've now extended your property by thousands of acres, technically.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do anything on that land as far as, you know, I can't use it as far as building things or growing food, but I can go over there to hunt. You know, as far as a bug out situation, if I had to bug out from my property, I could bug out into the National Forest and be safe.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah, there's advantages for sure. Arkansas has a very low cost of living. It's one of the poorer states. But when you live this lifestyle, the off-grid lifestyle, it doesn't matter whether you live in a state that has a booming economy or not, really.
Yeah, it's actually advantageous to be in an economy that's more affordable.
Sure, yeah, that's
right. If you are off-grid and have an autonomous income,
right.
Which we will cover more in depth in the next episode, yeah.
Yeah, and the property taxes, that was another reason. Like I said earlier, $30 a year is just crazy
that's
cheap.
That's crazy. That's like $2.50 a month.
Yeah.
Now, less than that.
That'll go up, I'm sure, because I'm building structures. I'm improving the property. So as I improve the property, they'll raise my taxes. But it still will be cheap compared to other places.
But you don't report that you've improved the property, do you?
No.
I mean, they'd have to actually physically come out and see
yeah.
that. And I highly doubt they do that. Have they ever done that?
I mean, they have people whose job is to drive out to certain areas and look for improvements on property. They also also use satellite, so they can see if a structure is built. They can just use Google and see if you've built anything on the property. So, yeah, they do that. And there are laws here. Like, they can only increase your property taxes every 3 years, and they can only increase it by a certain percentage. And I don't remember what it was, but it seems like it was like 3 or 4%. So,
which will be an extra dollar.
Yeah, it'll go up. Yeah, it'll go up, but that's okay. Yeah, so those were the main reasons. There also included in that was when we were looking for property, we were also looking for wild edibles in the area and how easy they would be to
foraging.
Find. Yeah. And we found a lot of, foraging opportunities with this property. I mean, there's,
wow, that's awesome.
I've got probably 3 acres of this property is covered in wild blueberries. I found a wild plum tree. There's blackberries everywhere. So yeah, that was another,
sheesh, that sounds amazing.
But we looked for a long time, you know, it was a process.
Yeah, foraging is a huge, like, for me, that's a huge thing, because I'm a forager. You know, I tend to be more of a forager than a farmer, so that would be huge to have berries and fruits on your property. I mean, it sounds luxurious.
Right.
That's like a luxury.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're paying a lot of money for blueberries in the supermarket.
Right.
Yeah, and blackberries. Holy moly. They're expensive. How about timber? What's your timber situation?
My land is covered in woods. I mean, it's just raw land, wooded land, like almost forest-like.
Wow.
Lots of oak, lots
nice
of cedar.
Nice straight timbers. Cedars are straight. Oaks aren't so straight, but the cedars make for great timber.
Yeah, we have a lot of choices. There's a lot of oak, a lot of cedar. There's a lot of hickory. So
wow.
It's good
for smoking. All those flavors are like great smoking flavors.
Yeah.
Sounds very desirable. But I think the downsides are, okay, you have crazy humid summers, don't you? Like, you're like humided out.
Yeah, summers are really hot and humid and lots of bugs and skeeters and ticks and chiggers. And yeah, that's a pain in the butt. There's also, you know, my property is all sloped. There's no flat places on my property, which is part of why it was so cheap, because it's just difficult to build on the side of a hill.
Totally.
Everything I build is more complex than if I had to build it on a flat spot. So that's a disadvantage, but we've overcome all that. You know, that's a trade-off we were willing to make for the other advantages.
Yeah, you made lemonade out of a lemon.
That's right.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a lemon, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't get to my house unless you have a four-wheel drive, so that eliminates a lot of... I don't know what...
No one's going to be trekking up your way.
No. I'm not worried about things like home invasions and burglary and robbery and all that. It's just not going to happen where I am.
Yeah, it sounds pretty ideal to me.
Yeah, we love it. That's a pretty basic rundown of, you know, the kind of things you want to look for when you're looking for a place.
Right.
And once we get through these first 7 episodes, we can even dive deeper into some of the topics we talked about today. You know, we could do full episodes on most of the stuff we've talked about and get even more detailed.
Yeah, I'd really like to go into the nomadic a little bit more.
Yeah.
And building out nomadic rigs, you know, that's just like super cool.
Mm-hmm.
So many subtopics and niches out of all of these topics. So we're going to hammer down, you know, the 7 pillars and then continue the off-grid series, niching down into these interesting subtopics. So that'll be something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tuesdays is our why you want to go off grid.
Right.
And we cover a lot of like theory and philosophy and current events and things that are like, now's a really good time to go off grid. How do I do that? Well, just listen to Friday's episode and we'll tell you.
That's right.
Cool. Well, thank you for tuning in, everyone. And check out the offgridoutpost.com. We've got lots of great content on there. We've got free downloads on there, free PDFs, really cool stuff. You can email us any questions or comments at theoffgridoutpost@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voice message. There's a link in the show notes. And please leave a review for our podcast. It helps us get found.
Yes.
Yes.
We would love reviews.
We love reviews and use our feedback.
Yeah.
We've been listening to our user feedback. We're starting to get some, and we've actually kind of started shaping our podcasts around feedback. So it's very helpful for us when you give us a little bit of constructive criticism or compliments.
Mm-hmm.
We like both.
Yep.
So yeah, tune in next time and we'll catch you later.
Talk to you later.
Peace.
Here's a little teaser for what's coming next week. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Why you gotta be like that? Why you gotta be racist? Why you gotta be racist against Italians, Cyrus?
Well, so...
You got a problem? You got a problem with Italians?
Crap, am I a racist now? Dadgummit.
I think you're... Well, that makes you a fascist if you're a racist, so dang.
Thanks for listening to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe so you can get all the new episodes.